your engine.
WPRK Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College, and the best in basement radio. Right now you are tuned into the Motorsports Hour, talking about all sorts of racing that happens here on WPRK every Sunday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Let me give you the website to log on to if you would like to take part in the show. It is, as always, WPRK.org. Check us out online, see what we're playing, chat with other listeners, link to our Spinatron site, take us with you via the TuneIn app. And check our website out while you're at it, themotorsportshour.com, where you can find the podcast. All kinds of good stuff there. My name is Clark. Alongside me tonight, as always, Mr. Chris Wire to Wire Wire. How you doing over there, man? No, you're not. Hey, now.
Yes,
there we go.
Maybe. Hey.
All right.
Crack technical staff.
Yeah, we've got all kinds of new stuff going on in here. We've got different mics and different headphones. Man.
I know, but the team is on it.
Yeah. Actually, wait. Move that guy over. Okay, there we go.
All right. Yes, no?
Oh, yeah. There we go.
Is this like, that's good stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's good stuff right there.
That's like sitting on the speakers good.
Okay, I'm not going to ask any questions.
Howard Stern, man.
All right, okay. I thought you were making a Private Parts reference. But, okay, yeah. Just wanted to make sure. Hey, man. Big weekend here in the Sunshine State because we had sun and fun. The annual fly-in, I went and did airplane stuff all weekend.
You had sun and fun.
I had sun and fun. I had a lot of sun and fun.
I knew nothing of it. I knew it was in town.
I had a lot of sun and fun this weekend. Got to see a lot of cool stuff, a lot of cool airplanes. Did that on Saturday.
Nice thing about that?
Yeah.
Gets you out of yard work.
Yeah, it does get you out of yard work. Not only gets you out of yard work, and then by the time you get back, you've been in the sun. You've been having fun.
Does the future missus like airplanes?
She does. She loves airplanes.
Has she ever flown with you?
No, she has not. No, she has not. I haven't
flown. When are you going to remedy that?
On the honeymoon, actually, in Hawaii.
Really?
Not a bad place, yeah. So you're going up with an instructor. Got it all set up. And going up with an instructor in Hawaii. We're already spending an ungodly amount of money to go to Hawaii on a honeymoon, so why not spend some more?
You are smooth.
Yeah?
That's a smooth move right there.
You know, here's my theory, because I wanted to enjoy flying. There's not a better way to, introduce somebody to flying than flying around Hawaii, I would imagine.
Heck yeah.
You know?
That's why I say.
Flying is
laying the groundwork, brother.
But,
laying the groundwork.
I'm sure Hawaii is going to be better than flying around Florida.
I took the future missus, to a track event at Roebling Road.
Yeah? Yeah. There you go. Well,
didn't benefit me.
No?
But better luck to you.
All right. Well, thank you. She has not been to the racetrack. She's not really been to the racetrack. She went over to the Ferrari thing, and she enjoyed that and had a good time. But, watching, 333 SPs and Ferrari V10 Formula One cars ride around, pretty much everybody's going to enjoy that.
Or should.
Yeah. So she enjoyed
admitted.
That. Yeah. But nonetheless.
Or commented.
But yeah, Sun and Fun was awesome this weekend. A lot of cool airplanes.
Blue Angels.
I did not see them fly. Had to get back. Had dinner on the Avenue. Have you ever done this on Park Avenue?
No, don't they have dinner on the Avenue every night?
No, but not this. They close the street down. They set up tables. You bring all your food. I have a new name for
you
it.
You bring all your food?
You bring all your own food, yes. And then they shut the street down, so it's just wall-to-wall people, and it's a lot of fun. It's a great event.
I know, everybody, but there's wall-to-wall restaurants, so why do you need to bring your own?
Well, you could go get food if you wanted, but we brought our own. I smoked 2 pork butts. They were good.
Okay.
But yeah, everybody has some theme to the table. It's a cool little event.
Needless to say, I haven't done it.
It's a cool little event. It's a nice little
benefit?
Yeah. Benefits the city. The city's coffers, I guess.
Did you pay to get in?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to pay to buy a table.
Okay. You're losing me on this. You know that.
Okay. Why?
Because you have to pay to buy a table.
Yeah.
To bring your own food.
Yeah.
To eat on the road.
Yeah.
Where there's already restaurants.
You got to see it to get it.
Okay.
Okay. Trust me, it's fun. It's really, quite frankly, get drunk on Park Avenue and you might eat some food, too.
I love Winter Park as much as anybody.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
But that just doesn't make sense.
Oh, it's great. It's 16th annual. It's a huge event. Tables, how long do you think it takes? They have like 120 tables or something. How long do you think it takes to sell out those 120 tables?
Like 30 minutes,
yeah.
If that.
Yeah. Yep. Just about.
Yeah, people love the park, man.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So it's a lot of fun. Had that. Had a recovery day today where I got to watch a lot of racing, and it was fun because we do have some racing to talk about.
And you didn't have to do yard work.
And I did not have to do yard work.
Man.
Did not have to do yard work.
I want your life.
It's good stuff, man. It's not that I don't ever have to do yard work. It's just that I just didn't do it.
I still want that.
Okay. All right. Well.
That was not me.
Let's get into some of the stuff that we have. We have China, the Chinese Grand Prix, and then also IMSA from Long Beach as well this weekend.
With the requisite references?
Sure. Monaco of the Pacific?
Yeah, of course.
All right.
Did that come up?
I did not watch the IndyCar portion of it.
Okay.
So I cannot tell you.
I can only imagine
how many times Monaco
somebody would
referenced.
Equate IndyCars going around Long Beach with Formula One going around Monaco and call it the same.
Yeah, because Long Beach and Monaco are very, very similar cities. I don't know. I can't really speak to that because I've never been to Long Beach.
I know, but anybody that would come up with the 36 hours of Florida,
yeah.
Could easily come up with Monaco of the Pacific.
Yes. Well, we will talk about that, but before we get to that. Let's talk about Formula One, and before we really get into Formula One and the race that was in China, let's talk about some news, shall we?
Shall we? Yep, we shall.
Let's talk, should we start with the, let's start with Max Verstappen, and not necessarily Max Verstappen, but Jos Verstappen. Max's dad and, whatever we want to, his dad and the guy who's kind of...
He's not anything else.
Yeah, He's just his dad. Well... Is it possible for Max to fire him from that?
Probably not.
Might not be a bad idea, because Jos is just a hothead. He keeps getting into, trouble, getting in fights and stuff. This is the behavior of a drunk 20-year-old, not you know.
Do we know what precipitated it?
No, but he got arrested again for getting into a fight.
I'm sure somebody belittled his son, called him a, you know, wannabe or something like that. And frankly, you know, if I had a couple of Dutch beers in me, I'd probably slug somebody too.
Well, he's been arrested for assault on his former girlfriend. He was arrested for attempted murder at one point on his former girlfriend. But that was a misunderstanding, apparently. And that was straightened out, and that was not the case. So don't want to give the perception that, but, you know, apparently ran into somebody with a car, assault on his, you know, his wife he was arrested for at one point. He was, you know, he apparently got into it with his dad, which is Max's grandfather, a year or so ago.
Yeah, that's where the similarities between he and I end.
Yeah?
I don't do any of that stuff.
Yeah. You mean you don't go and try to run people over with your car or,
never have.
Or beat people up?
No.
Your wife or your dad, you don't beat them up?
No.
Well, these have lots of allegations. He's been arrested for it a lot of the time. It just seems that a cloud seems to follow him. Well, Max's grandfather has now stepped in and talked with Dr. Helmut Marko, kind of heads up the whole Red Bull organization, just saying, you know, hey, this is not Max's deal. This is, you know, his dad. And, you know, let's not associate him with it, which I'm all for. You know, you don't need to bring Max down because his dad's doing some funky things, but you got to do whatever you can to kind of start to distance yourself from some of that stuff, too.
Agreed.
Yeah. I don't know. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because a kid at that age, you know, while he's got a lot on his shoulders.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of opportunity ahead of him. Doesn't need that level of distraction.
No, you know, what you need from your father, especially when you're in a position like he is, you know, support and help and guidance. I mean, he's a former Formula One driver. What would be better than going to your father to ask for help and ask for guidance? But I don't know. Josh just seems to be a bit of a hothead.
And that can easily be eroded, you know, to the point where Max has no reason to go ask him anything.
Yeah.
Because you can't be certain of the information that you're getting.
I don't know. It's just bizarre. But let's move on from that. Let's talk about Mr. Pascal Wehrlein.
Yeah. He's kind of on gardening leave.
He kind of is. And I'm beginning to think that this whole thing is just bizarre. I do not get it. It does not make any sense to me. Pascal Wehrlein.
I think it resolved itself.
It hasn't yet.
Oh, just wait.
You know, I think it resolved itself this weekend a little bit more, yes, with the performance of his replacement. That being said, the whole thing is just bizarre. You know, he had this crash in the Race of Champions where we didn't know exactly what the injury was, but he injured his back. This week, Toto Wolff came out and said, well, he essentially had a fracture in his back. So, you know, some sort of a fracture in some vertebrae or something. But he's been cleared now for weeks to go back racing. He's been cleared by doctors, by the FIA and everybody, to go back to racing. So the doctors have said, Pascal, you're okay, go back racing. Now what we've had in Melbourne is that, well, I'm not fit enough to run the race distance. I won't be able to make the whole race because I'm not in good enough of shape. But I'll be back for China. Great, great, great. And then all of a sudden, just before China, I'm not going to run in China. Well, what about Bahrain? It's the week after. Oh, yeah, I should be back for that. But none of this makes any sense to me. This just does not make any sense to me. The idea that I'm not in good enough shape to last that long, last a race distance in a Formula One car.
I kind of understand it.
I kind of understand it. But, I mean, come on, man.
Well,
I mean,
that's
such an excuse to end all excuses.
Did you see any of the data coming off the cars in practice?
Inform me on what you're talking about. Fill me in.
The G-meter.
Yeah.
Last year's G-meter in the middle section peaked at 4.9 G. This year, 5.5 G.
That's a lot.
So, you know, a 56-lap race, which we had today, to a guy who is, according to reports, 9 weeks behind everybody else on his training regimen. Not will be disastrous, but could be disastrous. And, I mean, I understand. I don't know that it's true. I mean, there's a lot of spin.
I hope
the team is standing behind him. I understand that. logically, it makes sense when you put all the information together. But the other aspect of it, he's only in his second year of Formula One racing. And yes, he was a DTM champion. And yes, he has, you know, the blessings of Mercedes and so forth. But a guy like that's got to be hungrier than just sitting by. And he didn't
exactly.
He wasn't even at the weekend.
Exactly.
He was not at the track.
Exactly. This is it's this kind of antipathy that he's showing towards Formula One. Why he's not even, you're right, he's not even there.
Well, it was reported that he had taken this weekend away from the track to train. He has a very intense training regimen ahead of him to try and speed things up a little bit. And I mean, I understand I'm a runner, and if you've been prepping for a race and all of a sudden you have like an ankle injury or something like that, you can't make that up overnight.
I agree, but your job is not to be a runner. Is your job, I mean, if your job is to be a runner and you know you're running in the Boston Marathon is happening whether you're ready or not, and you know, yes, he was injured and he's got to recover, but just show up and race. Do your best. The images that you have of Formula One drivers and you know, a test of will, a test of strength. You know, you look back at Ayrton Senna being lifted out of the car in Brazil because he was so exhausted.
We aren't there anymore.
I know, and it's a shame because you know all you have to do is look at Niki Lauda. Niki Lauda was, for all intents and purposes, dead. I mean, he was dead. He was in a burning Formula One car. All of his, you know, he had burns everywhere.
He was 10 seconds away from death.
Yeah. I mean,
according to most reports.
You know, his face has been, you know, disfigured. He has no ear. He was in the car and raced to the championship. Every time he took his helmet on and off at the end of that season, pieces of his scalp and pieces of his skin that were burned and grafted on, they would stick to the inside of his helmet. That's how much determination Niki Lauda showed.
We're not there anymore.
And it's a shame. Because this nonsense from Pascal Wehrlein of I'm not in good enough shape, well, guess what? If you're not going to be, for lack of a better term, man up and get in the car.
I can give you a little bit of insight on this. If he doesn't have the understanding of the Mercedes higher-ups relative to this, none of this goes anywhere. He's in the seat. If Mercedes says, yes, we understand, we just want you to be 100%, you know, you're still in our favor, then he goes and does what he does. And that's where we are. So I would guess that Mercedes is fine with it. And so Sauber just has to put up with it. The rest of us, we can talk about it on the radio.
You know, I guess so. Because I have high hopes for Pascal Wehrlein. I thought he was going to be partnering Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes this year.
He was a DTM champion, so yeah. He's a solid guy behind the wheel, but we don't know anything about him in Formula One. He was at Manor last year, and he was average.
Yeah. Well, this does not lead me to, you know, jumping into the Pascal Wehrlein camp. If you can stand up, if you can walk, I mean, how many drivers have we seen be injured and then come back from injury that are, you know, big, significant injuries, and that they never once said, you know, yeah, I broke my leg. I can't get in the car because my leg's not healed yet. You know, I can't get in the car because my back's not healed yet. And if that was the case, we all understand that. We all completely understand that. But this is the doctor saying, no, you're fine. Go racing. Go race. Well, I'm just not ready.
Well, I mean, if you're a soccer player and your endurance level isn't there, you can always be subbed for, and it's not a dangerous situation if you fail. In Formula One, it's kind of like being a pilot. If for some reason, you know, the forces that you're under during the course of your performance create a situation where you could be in danger, it could be catastrophic.
I don't disagree with you one bit, but I think doctors make that determination, and the self-governance here is a little too much. I think the idea that you can be racing in Formula One and you're not doing everything you can to take that opportunity is just bizarre to me.
At his age, it is bizarre.
Yeah.
Because he has shown nothing, really. So in order to continue, you need to show that you have a little bit of metal
Yeah.
to be able to push through some, you know, some circumstances.
You got to show them that you've got what it takes. I've got what it takes to be a Formula One driver.
But again,
do you think if Lewis Hamilton or Sebastian Vettel or you know, whoever,
those guys can't afford to miss a race because they're running for a title. Pascal Wehrlein is not running for anything.
Yeah.
Other than a seat for next year.
So it doesn't matter to him?
If he has the blessing of Mercedes, then it doesn't matter to him because he's in the good graces of Mercedes. If Mercedes says, yeah, you know, Pascal, you're fine with us. Don't worry about it. Then he owes, because what that shows me is he has zero loyalty to Sauber.
Yeah. Well, he's not driving the Sauber because Sauber wants him. He's driving this hour because Mercedes says, how about we, you know, give you some deals and why don't you put him in the car? Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
But it's still bizarre and it still doesn't reflect well on him.
No.
The question is, you know, what will he race like once he's finally here? Which, I as we alluded to earlier, probably should be sooner rather than later.
I'm thinking back to my time when I was a freshman in high school. I was a freshman in high school. I was on the football team.
That was a long time ago.
I was a freshman on football. I was on the freshman football team. I was not a very good football player. We were practicing onside kicks. I'm on the recovery team in practice. Guy kicks the ball by me. I don't go after and dive after it. And coach says, you know, sprinkle. He gets in my face. What the heck are you doing? I'm like, oh, coach, in a game, don't worry. I'll dive after it, you know, but I'll get on it in the game. And you know, and he said, what? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. What do you mean? You'll do it in the game, but you're not going to do it in practice? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Start running laps. And you know what? Coach was right. Coach was absolutely right. You know, Pascal Wehrlein, oh, I'm not going to race for Sauber now, but if I'm in that Mercedes, I'd be in the car.
He hasn't ever said that. That would be presumptuous.
It is presumptuous, but you got to race like every race. Your career depends on it because, quite frankly, it does.
Well, it should.
Yeah.
But again, I'm of the mind that if Mercedes hasn't signed off on his, you know, absence, he's not absent.
Well, it's bizarre. I still think it's bizarre. I don't know if we're going to see him in Bahrain. For the longest time, I thought there's something more to this. This is a more serious injury than we've been led on to believe. But I guess it's...
Well, reports continue to indicate that, you know, he's physically healthy, yeah. But it's just a training issue. So,
yeah. All right.
We'll see where we are next weekend.
Yeah. Well, Sergio Perez says he wouldn't give up his seat because of fitness. But anyway, a bunch of people said, yeah, I don't think so. Doesn't make sense to me either. Let's move on from that, though, and get to the weekend that was in China. And China, and, you know, somewhat interesting circuit.
It is. It has a lot of different elements to it, and I think from a, you know, when you compare it to some Herman Tilke tracks, it has a little more character than others.
Yeah.
The uphill, you know, turn one, nearly 360 degrees, probably I'd say 270 or so.
Yeah.
Kind of unique. Certainly the very, very long back straightaway.
Yes.
Good stuff. You know, lens to overtaking.
It's, yeah.
A canopied front straightaway.
Yeah. That is cool where you have the, you know, press boxes and everything kind of above the front stretch. You have all these seats that are now signs that used to have people in them. Now they have, you know.
Not on the front straightaway, though.
No.
There were actually a lot of people there.
There were. There were more than normal, it seemed like, at the Chinese Grand Prix, which, you know, you think is a little odd when you're talking about a country of 1 billion plus people. You know,
well, and they're like in Shanghai, and Shanghai alone has, what, 25 million people who live there?
It's a lot. It's a lot.
I think it's 25 million.
I think they're in Shanghai kind of like Daytona's in Orlando, though. I don't think the track is necessarily right next to Shanghai.
Well, in order to accommodate 25 million people,
yeah,
it does kind of spread out a little bit.
Yeah. Well... attendance was better, it looked like, than it has been in years past. That being said, we had a free practice one on Friday, which was really, really wet with not a whole lot of people running at all. Free practice two ended up being rained out. after that. And then we got to qualifying and had a really exciting qualifying on Saturday.
Yeah.
Qualifying, I will say this. I think this could have been the best qualifying I've seen in the past couple of years. It was good stuff. It was some real, maybe not past couple of years, but I liked it better than, certainly better than Australia 2 weeks ago. And, well, there was just a lot of stuff up and down the field. You know, in Q1, you had Max Verstappen not making it out of Q1.
Yeah, that was odd.
Yeah, to say the least. In addition to that, you had Sauber's new guy, who's filling in for an injured Pascal Wehrlein, looping the car on the, you know, last corner, onto the front stretch, looping the car, running into a barrier and ripping the corner off the car. Basically, his time was good enough to get him into Q2, but he broke the car in Q1, so no more qualifying for him.
Yeah, and the unfortunate part about it was that Romain Grosjean in the Haas was on a hot lap that would have easily put him into Q2.
Yeah.
And because of the yellow, he was behind the incident. He had to slow and missed it by 1.3 seconds.
Yeah. You got to put that lap in ahead of time, because this is not the only time this has happened. This happens. This sort of thing happens. You just got to be prepared for it and, you know, move on. We go to Q2. No huge surprises there. McLaren of Alonso getting knocked out in Q2. We said one Sauber's, the other Sauber getting knocked out. One of the Toro Rosso's and the other Haas by Magnussen getting knocked out there in that session. Then we go to Q3, and this is where it got exciting, because you had, you know, the ultimate lap time ever recorded at China was starting to fall, and you had some very fast laps set by Lewis Hamilton, his teammate Valtteri Bottas right there, and then Sebastian Vettel and Kimi Raikkonen are right behind him into the 131s. Is Hamilton's like a 131.9, but everybody else is kind of like a 132, low 132s, just a couple tenths off, and you're thinking, this is going to be interesting. And then, you know, everybody goes in, puts on some new shoes, comes back out with just a couple minutes left, and Lewis Hamilton is actually out there, you know, not to be the last of this, you know, kind of four-car group to cross the finish line, but he's the first. So he goes out there and puts in a crazy fast lap. And then here comes Valtteri Bottas, 131.865. And then here comes Kimi Raikkonen. He can't best him. So right now, the way we sit, it's Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas right next to him. And then, you know, Kimi Raikkonen and Sebastian Vettel. And then Vettel comes across and bests Bottas by 1/1000th of a second. A 131.864. For Vettel, a 131.865 for Bottas.
Yeah, and when you think in terms of, you know, the pace of those cars, and they're all, you know, below the track record, 132.2 was the fastest race lap track record by Michael Schumacher a mere 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And we had four cars that beat that.
Yeah.
Pace in qualifying.
You know, here's what's interesting. I keep thinking about this, and I love how fast the cars are now. But we had talked about being 4 to 5 seconds a lap faster than last year. We're not there yet. But what's interesting is we keep talking about is these cars are so amazingly fast, and they're so much faster than they used to be. Well, they're not that much faster than what they were 10 years ago.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
They're faster
you're talking
than what they were
about,
last year.
Well, we had a 3-liter V10
yeah.
back in the day, and now we're talking about a 1.6-liter V6
yeah.
with hybrid power.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, to be on par with those cars, and you got to remember those cars back in the 04, 05 days were not very restricted as aerodynamically.
Yeah, they had some more aero. They also had a lot more, and they didn't have active suspension, but they had all of the, you know, ABS and, you know, auto shift and traction control and all that kind of stuff that we don't have now.
Adjustable differentials
yeah.
and everything you could ever want.
Yeah. So we lost a lot of that stuff, which kind of detracted from the show, we could say. But now we get the car sliding around. By the way, Lewis Hamilton's power slide in Q3. How sweet was that, man?
Very nice.
That's good stuff. You know, gathered it up, kept right on going. That was solid stuff right there.
Well, and the funny thing is the super slow-mo tells you, you know, just how intuitive these guys are to that.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as it stepped out, he was on it, and he recovered perfectly. I mean, the hand motion to gather it up, and, you know, he made one correction, and that was it. He didn't have to make two or three like, you know, an average human would.
Yeah. It, what was amazing is, and it wasn't like, oh, man, I almost lost it there. Let me gather it up and, you know, get my wits about me. No, he put the car on the provisional pole with that lap.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he gathered it up and went right into the next corner. It wasn't like he gathered it up and then, you know, was on a straightaway for a little bit. He gathered it up and he was right into another corner and hit that apex spot on. It just kind of shows you how good these guys are and how good Lewis Hamilton is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And like you said, no wasted motion in there at all.
Not at all.
This was not a tank slapper type thing. This was a one minute correction, catch it, keep on going, and I'll put it on the provisional pole in the process.
Yeah, and in fairness, it was a low-speed corner. It wasn't like Eau Rouge or anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm fully confident that Lewis could do the same thing at Eau Rouge if he was called upon to do so.
Yeah. Well, it was good stuff. Let's move to Sunday, to race day, to today. And we're greeted with a wet track, or a damp track.
Which everybody knew was coming. It wasn't a surprise.
Yeah, they had actually talked at one point of moving the race up to Saturday because of the inclement weather, the threat of inclement weather, but they didn't. They left it on Sunday, and we were greeted with, you know, a damp track, but it was never really a factor. Rain, you know.
Oh, no, it was a factor.
Well, it was never a factor throughout the race. We never had rain show back up again.
Right.
To clarify. Yes.
Right. But it was... I mean, I would call it more than damp. I would say that it was an absolutely wet track. I mean, it's very similar to, you know, what we see in Florida where a rainstorm moves through and you're left with the aftermath.
Yeah.
The problem is that the ambient temperature there wasn't like Florida, so you didn't have an immediate burn off of the water on the track. It stuck around for a while.
You know, it was kind of like what we saw at Daytona this year. It rained. You know, the track was soaking wet, but the sun didn't come out to burn off the rain, so it was just a kind of damp track.
Yeah.
Now, what you do have in Formula One is tires that act like giant water pumps, but you had a race that started with everybody, except for one, on intermediate tires.
Which are basically grooved slicks.
Yeah.
With some minor grooving strategically, you know, put into the tread to do exactly what it's designed to do, which is throw water and provide grip.
Yeah, and you had it, you know, one driver, that being Mr. Carlos Sainz Jr. electing for slicks, which I thought, this could be interesting. You know, this could be one of those things he might end up 20 seconds behind the pack at the end of the first lap, or who knows, at the end of lap two or three, he could be up there in the lead.
I think that was a gamble, because the way that works out is that under those circumstances, nobody has to pit for any reason.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no caution. There's no safety car. There's no incidents. And when you're talking about the very beginning of a race on a track under those conditions, those odds are not in your favor.
No, it's pretty common with a, you know, a wet track that you're going to have either a virtual safety car or a safety car. And, well, we were not disappointed today. We get to the start. Lewis Hamilton on the pole, Sebastian Vettel right next to him. You know, are we going to have some fireworks? Well, Vettel does not get a great start. Lewis Hamilton does get a good start. Vettel, however, almost halfway out of his grid box. Interesting position for him to put the car in.
Yeah, it's a kind of a throwback to the Michael Schumacher days where he would, if he was not on the pole, and sometimes if he was, he would angle his car to become an impediment to, you know, the guy behind him in case, you know, the other guy got a better start, then he would occupy the position strategically. The other guy would have to find a way around. It looked like that's what Sebastian was going for. However, Michael used to put it all in the box and just angle it. Sebastian had two cars outside the, it's like the batter in the batter's box in a baseball game with 1 foot in and 1 foot out.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I'm looking at thinking, how can he do that? That should be, you know, I'm not a big fan of issuing penalties, and we had opportunities to issue lots of penalties during this race. Thankfully, we didn't. which was nice. But I'm looking at this thinking, how is that allowed to start like that? Anyway.
Apparently it was investigated because they had talked about it and been
no further
nothing
action.
Was ever issued.
Yeah. Well, he does not get a great start, but he's able to maintain second place. Had a nice little battle with Bottas there in the process. Meanwhile, in the back, Max Verstappen starting in 15th place. He came through the field, I mean, just like he was shot out of a cannon. He must have passed, what, six cars or something like that?
I think he passed six on the first lap.
It's just...
Which, if you recall, Brazil awesome. Last year really shouldn't surprise anybody.
Yeah.
Although it's, I wish we had more pictures of it because it would have been glorious to watch.
It was good stuff. What we saw of it was really spectacular for Max Verstappen on the opening lap. It seemed like everybody was braking, going into a corner, just kind of playing follow the leader. And he said, well, I don't want to do that. I want to drive around the outside of you. And did. Did that multiple times. I mean, it was just some really good stuff from Max. Meanwhile, back behind that, you have Lance Stroll, coming together there with a Sauber and knocking Lance Stroll into the gravel trap. Got it stuck. Day done for him. And, got
out. And that was his fault, too.
What?
The incident.
I thought it was pretty much a racing incident. I think he might have tried to close the door when the horse was already, out of the barn kind of thing.
He left the door wide open in the preceding corner, and Sergio got up alongside him.
Yeah.
Whatever he expected Sergio to do, he wasn't going to disappear. He was that far up alongside of him.
Yeah. I mean, they hit basically wheel to side pod kind of thing.
Yeah,
so.
Well, when Sergio tried to back out of it because he saw this guy starting to close the door, he was so far up alongside, he couldn't get out of the way.
Yeah.
And so, so prematurely ends another Grand Prix for Mr. Stroll.
Yeah. 0-for-2 so far for him.
Yeah.
Not how you want to start out. So, to answer the question, has Lance Stroll crashed today? Yes.
Yes. Yes, he has.
Yes, he has. So, he crashed out of the race. Yes. He's out of the race now. The position that he's in necessitates a virtual safety car so that they can then go out, retrieve his car. He can get out, everybody safe. I'm all for this. You want to keep drivers safe. You want to keep everybody safe in this situation. And then under that safety car, under the virtual safety, we were under the virtual safety car, if I'm not mistaken, yes. Under this virtual safety car, we have a lot of people come in and pit and make some changes. Everybody's changing off of the, enters onto
mostly some softs
or super softs, yeah. Meanwhile, Lewis Hamilton stays out, and I'm thinking, oh, no, is Mercedes making the mistake again? But, you have Vettel coming in, everybody behind them pretty much coming in and changing onto some different rubber, some dry weather rubber, and Lewis stayed out. I'm thinking this could be that situation again where Mercedes is just making the wrong decision.
Or it could be that Ferrari made the wrong decision.
It could be. Yeah, it could be. Well,
we've seen that from last year, too.
We're under the virtual safety car, and then we decide to let's get on a real safety car out there because everybody's favorite Pascal Wehrlein replacement driver, Antonio Giovinazzi, decides to loop it basically exactly where he did in qualifying, runs it into the wall, different side of the track this time, but pretty much the same accident he had in qualifying, has that accident again in the race today. He's out of the race, and the processed carbon fiber is now all over the front straightaway. Safety car to clean up the circuit. He's out of the race. Lewis Hamilton then comes in under the full safety car and changes on to a new pair of shoes.
Yes. Can we now, at this point,
yes,
stop talking about Antonio Giovinazzi as the next replacement for Ferrari?
Yes. I think so.
Because that was like all the rage after, and I said, after the Australian Grand Prix, he's done one race.
Yeah.
He brought the car home. That was his job.
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything else. It wasn't spectacular. It wasn't impressive. He did what he was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And people were already, touting him as a replacement for Raikkonen next year. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. He's not there.
No, he's not.
So let's stop talking about it.
So he's 1-for-2. Lance Stroll, 0-for-2.
Well, Giovinazzi probably doesn't have a multi-billionaire dad stroking a check either.
Yeah, I guess so. Be nice.
Yeah.
It helps.
Seriously.
It helps. And with that, you have a race starting to set in that got really, really good.
But there's no passing.
Yeah, there is no passing, except for all the passing that we had in this race.
Yeah. Can we put that to bed, too?
Yeah, there's no more passing. No more passing in Formula One.
We had passing on opponents. We had passing on teammates. It was really good stuff.
It was excellent stuff. Max Verstappen, where did he start again?
16th.
Yeah. At one point he was running in second place.
Yes, he was.
That's incredible stuff. That's some impressive stuff. Making passes on the track. Meanwhile, you have a great battle with some Ferraris. You have Max passing his teammate at one point, passing Danny Ricciardo. You have this, Ferrari battle, then, kind of hunting down the Red Bulls and catching them and passing them and just some really, really good stuff. Some great stuff.
And here's where one of the situations with Ferrari, this early in the season, you don't have a number one.
Yeah.
You recall towards the end of last year, Raikkonen said, hey, I'm fully here to support Seb.
Yeah.
He's ahead and he's got a shot at this thing. I'm fully here to support. We're not there. And you had Kimi behind both Red Bulls after the pit stops on fresher tires, but he was running decent pace. But even though I picked him to win the race, I will not do so again this year.
Yeah.
Because he really showed me nothing.
Yeah, he never really tried to make a move.
He didn't. He was riding around. He was complaining about the car. His lap times did not indicate that there were anything wrong with the car.
I have no power. I have no torque. But his lap times were right there with everybody else.
And he used it for naught. I mean, there was nothing going on in his game that said that he was doing anything but riding around.
Yeah.
And so, there was a 3 or 4 lap period there where Sebastian was behind him. And Sebastian finally said, I'm sorry, enough of this. And he made quick work of him at that point. But Ferrari didn't make a call, and Sebastian didn't call over that we heard of to request that they make a call that he be let by, because he pretty quickly dispatched the Red Bulls once he got by Kimi.
Yeah, and this was after the Red Bulls kind of moved to the front, then the Ferraris came into the fore, and they got better as the race went on. Red Bull struggled a little bit. That moved the Ferraris forward. I think as the track started to dry out a little bit, you started to get more grip kind of on the Ferrari end of things and help them be a little bit faster versus in the wet. Maybe the Red Bull's a better car and on a damp track kind of thing. It was cool to see the race develop. My favorite part of the race was then when Valtteri Bottas was behind the McLaren of Fernando Alonso. He's well behind him on the back straightaway. Well behind him. And he went by him like he went by Alonso like Alonso was some, just old person in the right lane on I-4, just sitting there with his blinker on, stuck and not knowing where they're going, doing 50 miles an hour in the right lane. And here you come 80 miles an hour in the left lane coming right past. And I went by him on the right, but still went by him like he was standing still.
Yeah. And that's pretty indicative when you couple DRS with the Mercedes power advantage.
Oh,
and it's pretty blatant.
Tells you how bad that Honda is. And then what the best part of this was Alonso radios in and says, there must be something wrong with Bottas's car. He's not pulling away from me fast enough.
Well, we should mention how Bottas got there in the first place.
He had a spin under the safety car.
Yeah, this is a Mercedes factory driver.
Yeah.
The replacement for world champion Nico Rosberg.
You don't spin under the safety car.
That might take some splaining.
Yeah. It's not good.
I would rather not be him.
No, same here. Well, whatever it is.
He does race for, a very emotional, understanding German team. So yeah. I would expect, full consideration of
absolutely.
Of his feelings and, just the emotions that were running through and stirring, his soul when he spun underneath a caution. Uh-huh.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out. Well, whatever it is, his day was not a good day for Bottas. Botas ended up doing a whole bunch of nothing, just except for driving by Alonso like he was standing still. But that really showed you how bad the Honda is. Because Ferrari has caught up to Mercedes, more or less. I mean, we are battling at the front of the field between these two juggernauts. The Renault is not there, but it's still close. The Honda is not even in the same category here. I mean, we know it's bad, but it seems like they've almost gotten worse from last year. And I didn't think that was possible.
I think it is. I mean, they may have gone in a direction trying to fix the woes from last year
and just made it worse.
And yeah, they haven't done themselves any favors.
I will say this: I talking about Mercedes and you know their performance. If you watch the Masters over the course of the weekend, you know that the Masters always does this kind of special deal with TV advertising and everything. It's not like your normal football game or whatever where they just have on the normal commercials. It will be a couple of groups will, you know, basically take over all the commercials. So this year you had AT&T. I think American Express might have had some stuff in there too. And Mercedes was a big sponsor. So you would have a commercial break. You'd have a 30-second or a 1-minute Mercedes spot, and then you'd be back to the golf. You know, you'd have a 30-second, you know, AT&T spot, and then back to the golf, and you just kind of had those same commercials over and over. You didn't, you know, get the Chuck E. Cheese stuff and whatever. The, you know, there's no Nike stuff, no Coca-Cola
very
stuff.
Very targeted.
Very targeted. Mercedes and AT&T. Mercedes, in almost every single one of their commercials, mentions their Formula One performance now, which is cool to see here in the U.S. You know, you can see it happening in Europe and that sort of thing, but it's cool that they're doing that, especially in an event like the Masters, that they're featuring the prominence of their Formula One team. And I think it actually says something about the growth of Formula One in the U.S., because if this was 10 years ago and for Mercedes would have just come off 3 world championships, I don't think we would have had that being featured like it is now.
No, Mercedes would still buy spots, but there would be no mention of the racing.
Yeah. You know, they have pictures of DTM cars, all kinds of stuff, but they talked about Formula One and everything to the largely American audience. I mean, you know, it was absolutely to the American audience. I mean, the advertisements are obviously different in different places around the world, but to the American audience, Mercedes is targeting, you know, people and they're targeting buyers because of their performance on the racetrack, which is cool to see. Yeah. I think it talks about Formula One and how much it's grown in recent years here in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, the jury's out whether that's your target audience for Formula One, but they weren't promoting the Formula One. They were using the Formula One to bolster their image in terms of, you know, a worldwide competitive, you know, luxury brand with performance aspects.
But it used to be buy a Mercedes because they, you know, are the most comfortable, they're the most luxurious, and they're built like tanks. Now it's buy a Mercedes. We've won 3 back-to-back-to-back world championships, which is cool. It's cool to see that. So let's run down the finishing order of the race. You had Lewis Hamilton in the lead, you know, gets shuffled back through pit stops. He gets back to the lead. You had Max Verstappen chasing him down. However, he was never quite able to get up to him. And then you had him starting to kind of the car going away from him and the car coming to the Ferrari. However, nobody could ever quite bring the fight to Lewis Hamilton in the end. They were right there, but Hamilton went on to win.
Sure. And Max did, you know, he did an admirable job trying to fight off Vettel, but he made a really bad mistake at the end of the long straightaway and basically gave up the position, which probably would have gone to Vettel anyway.
Yeah. So Sebastian Vettel finishes in second for Ferrari, Max Verstappen in third for Red Bull, his teammate Danny Ricciardo in fourth.
Wait, where did Max start again?
15th or 16th?
I think it was 16th.
Yeah, well, he finished in third on the podium.
Okay. That's same as his age, isn't it?
Yeah, 16?
16.
Yeah, works for me. Danny Ricciardo finishing in fourth. Kimi Raikkonen in fifth for Ferrari. Valtteri.
I will never pick him again.
Yeah, he just didn't have it. Remember when we kind of had this new Kimi Raikkonen in years past where, hey, the old Kimi's back. The old Kimi's not driving for Ferrari right now. This is just kind of like resigned to just parade around for the race.
Here's what we also have.
What?
We have a new Max Verstappen.
Yeah?
Max Verstappen, in the waning laps of the race, was whining like a baby.
Yes, he was.
Calling into his team, telling him to get Romain Grosjean, Ferrari-powered Haas, Romain Grosjean, who is a second and a half ahead of him, calling the team to get Charlie Whiting to get Romain Grosjean moved out of the way. And you know what Max did? He never closed that gap. And so Charlie could never, you know, they were never in a position to ask for Grosjean to move. He never got a blue flag.
Just close the gap and pass him.
You're 16 and you're whining. What are you doing out there?
Yeah. Well, Kimi Raikkonen finished in fifth for Ferrari, Valtteri Bottas in sixth for Mercedes. Just not a good performance from him today.
Not at all.
Yeah. Behind him, Carlos Sainz in seventh for Toro Rosso. A good finish for them, for him. However, a good finish, but there was the possibility of something great happening with the safety cars and everything. It just didn't pan out.
I think the Toro Rosso is sleepy fast, though. I mean, I think they're running a little bit under the radar this early in the season. But they are consistently in top 10.
Haas Ferrari, Kevin Magnussen finishing in eighth, getting some valuable points there for Haas, followed up by the two Force India Mercedes, Sergio Perez and Esteban Ocon, both cars scoring points for them. Romain Grosjean finishing in 11th.
I honestly think we were robbed of a really good finish for Haas, because I think the car was good. I don't think it was, you know, that much better than everybody else, but the fact that Grosjean had to start down in the lower third of the field really put him at a disadvantage, and I would have liked to have seen a better result for him. But Magnussen did an admirable job and brought home solid points for the team.
Yeah, did a nice job, and always nice to score some points and get into that prize money.
Indeed.
Get into that prize money. Let's talk. Let's move on from this, and should we go to IMSA? Should we go to Long Beach?
You mean Monaco?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Monaco.
On the Pacific?
Monaco and the Pacific. Yes. Monaco and the Pacific. We had a race that was a bit bizarre, to say the least, at the finish. A bizarre ending in GT Le Mans. You had, up front, you had the Visit Florida car out for the weekend. It had a crash, you know, in the warm-up to the race on Saturday. It had a crash on Friday. The car was unable to continue, which means no racing for them. Great thing about this, live on Fox. It was when they aired this race. On Fox, not Fox Sports 1 or Fox Sports 2, but Fox. Around the country, they aired this race, which was cool to see.
Nice.
You had a Cadillac being utterly dominant yet again leading into this, and are we going to see the tide start to turn here for Cadillac, or are we going to just have to hit it with some more balance of performance?
They show no signs of slowing down. Everything that's been thrown at them so far, they've been able to overcome.
Yeah. I heard an interview with Scott Pruitt the other day. He had a great
line. Hired his family at home.
Yeah. Called it the balance of politics. I loved it.
Well, I mean, he's right in amongst them now.
Yeah.
When you think in terms of where Lexus is coming into GTD and the level of competitiveness in that class, everybody's clamoring for, you know, some sort of leniency, deserve it or not. But yeah, he's right in amongst them now.
And it is political. I think that's something that often gets overlooked. We as fans and commentators on the sport, we look at it and kind of say, this car is, obviously faster, and they'll either slow that down or speed everybody else up. But there's a lot of stuff that goes in behind the scenes to, who gets hit with what. And, it's just part of the deal.
We have lauded IMSA up to this point.
Yeah.
As far as, the performance levels that were assigned to the various manufacturers and how that translated to results on the track, we've been very favorable of their treatment of everybody, and it's produced, a good show at both Daytona and Sebring.
Yeah, and quite frankly, it's not like everybody else was six laps behind, the Cadillacs throughout this race. It was a race, but it was a race that the Cadillacs won again, and we now have back-to-back-to-back winners of the first three events. Local racing team, Wayne Taylor Racing, wins at Long Beach. Jordan and Ricky get the V. Good for them.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously they're on point right now. I mean, they are the team to beat. Everything seems to be working in their favor. You could argue that, I'm drawing a blank. But anyway, the race at Daytona, they were not dominant in. They were just competitive. But they're doing everything right.
They are. And you know, we talked about the balance of performance, and we are closer now because you had now two other manufacturers on the podium. You had a Nissan DPI, Tequila Patron team, Scott Sharp, Ryan Dayal in second place, and the Mazda team finishing in third. Tristan Nunez and Jonathan Bomarito and the Mazda DPI finishing in third position, which is cool.
Good for them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be a shot in the arm right there. They started out this year really, really struggling. You know, the car was fast but unreliable. And so to get a third place finish in the third race should be extremely rewarding.
Let's talk about GT Daytona, then we'll go back to GT Le Mans. But GT Daytona, a back-to-back win for the Mercedes-AMG team. Gunnar Jeanette, Cooper McNeil, the Riley Motorsports car, getting the victory there. You had their sister car, Jerome Bleekmolen and Ben Keating, coming in second place. In third place, the Scuderia Corsa, driven by Christina Nielsen and Alessandro Balzon. Christina Nielsen there. That's their home race for Scuderia Corsa. You're listening to WPRK Winter Park, Florida, covering the IMSA race over in Long Beach. And now, why don't we get into GTLM? All right, Wire, say you've been racing for, you know, how long was this race? 2 hours or something? Whatever.
Probably 2:45.
Yeah, or whatever it is. We'll look it up. But you're running this race, and it comes down, there's an hour and 40 minutes. Is what the time was. So hour and 40-minute race, not a hugely long race, but you know, a long enough race. You're running this race, you come to the last corner of the last lap, and you're in the lead, and you're in a Corvette. You got your teammate behind you, and you got a Ford GT behind that. And we know what the last corner looks like at Long Beach. It is this incredibly tight corner where we've had all kinds of issues happen over the years. And this was
a 180-degree hairpin.
Yeah. That is as tight gets. Well, you had basically a battle in GT Daytona kind of back in the field. Everybody kind of piled in there, and then all of a sudden you had a bunch of cars stopped on the track, and nobody could get through. Well, you could get through, but it was just all kind of stacked up. Everybody was kind of stopped and wasn't really sure where to go. So what you have is the GTLM, Jan Magnussen, Antonio Garcia, who are in first place. They pull up to this giant traffic jam.
Traffic jam, exactly.
I mean, it's a traffic jam. It's not a traffic jam where you're just sitting in traffic and everybody's moving slow. There's kind of cars off. You know, they're kind of a kilter, and everybody's kind of in the wrong spot, and everybody's just stopped.
And these things don't turn on a dime.
No, race cars do not turn well at all.
And they don't go into reverse very quickly either.
No, they do not reverse easily either. Well, you have, this Corvette factory car pull up and basically get stuck. You have it get stuck because it kind of tries to go wide to avoid some cars on the inside, and somebody else gets stuck, and then somebody else gets stuck, and then they stop, but then their teammate goes to the inside, him and three other cars, and he goes from first to fifth, you know, under full course caution because he can't negotiate this traffic jam, and everybody else can.
Well, but it's under caution.
It's under caution, but for whatever reason, they moved on forward. If I was Corvette, now here's the downside. You have Corvette 1 and 2 basically in class. Then you have a Corvette 1 and 5. If I'm Corvette, I'm still going to protest this finish because I want my cars to be 1 and 2, not 1 and 5. And quite frankly, I think it should be changed.
Unofficial result?
The unofficial result is Ollie Gavin, Tommy Milner in the Corvette winning. Second place, Ford GT, Ford GT?
No.
No, the Ford GT, of course. The Ford GT, Richard Westbrook and Ryan Briscoe, the Porsche car, the Porsche 911 RSR after that. Then the BMW in fourth place, Bill Allbrun, Alexander Sims, and then Jan Magnussen and Antonio Garcia. They were in first. They have this traffic jam. There is no skill involved in this. This is just not even bad luck. This is just stupid. This is stupid that this happened.
Well, it's unfortunate.
Okay, I'll say, yeah. It's unfortunate, but it's also unfair, if you ask me.
Well, I mean, it depends on how the wording of the rule book is, because we have seen, you know, cars that, under a caution, you know, pull to the side and allow, you know, by slowing way down, allow other cars to go by, you know, either through mechanical difficulty or, you know, whatever reason. So passing under a caution under those circumstances is certainly allowed and doesn't bring any penalty. This, I don't know that you could characterize that, because obviously there was nothing wrong with the Corvette. It just had, you know, a traffic blocked
him
through no fault of his own.
No, yeah, exactly.
He just happened to be the first one to arrive on scene, and, you know, circumstances didn't favor him. Everybody else behind him was able to react differently because, you know, of where he was. They needed to find a way past him, and there just happened to be a way where he didn't have one. So, yeah, I think they could protest it, and whether they get any leniency or not, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I would. That's true. I know I would.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want to be one too?
Yeah,
I mean, in a manufacturer's battle that tight,
and we all know what Ford will do, what lengths they'll go to finish one too.
We do know that. Yes, yeah. We do know that. But they only had 6 cars at this event, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they had 12, maybe.
Okay,
but they still didn't beat the Corvette. Let's move on from that. Let's talk about Bahrain, because we're in Bahrain next week.
Yeah.
No break, man.
Flyaway race,
back.
Man.
Yeah. Back to back. We're going to Bahrain. We've at one point called it the Bahrain Grand Prix. We haven't called it the Bahrain Grand Prix in the past couple of years because we have seen some fantastic action at Bahrain.
We have. You know, a lot of it was between teammates in the front of the field with Mercedes. I expect it to probably be a little bit better. This year, Red Bull, you know, is going to bring a good chassis, but they're not going to have the power. But obviously, the Mercedes Ferrari battle is epic at this point.
It's good stuff. You know, we've had 2 races down. One has been won by Vettel. The other has been won by Lewis Hamilton. You know, we haven't talked about the championship yet because there's no reason to talk about it until you're, you know, 3 races in, as far as I'm concerned. So we'll start kind of following that down. And seeing how that is shaking up after Bahrain. But you have a track here that is, well, it's, you know, Bahrain's this island in the middle of the, you know, this desert island in the middle of the ocean that they used to, and I think still do, spray the sand dunes down with glue around it so it won't, you know, have sand blowing onto the track throughout the course of the race. You have a track surface that over the years has gotten bumpy and bumpy and bumpy because, you know, it's built on sand and, you know, it kind of settles over the years, but they've smoothed it out. They've repaved some sections, you know, changed a couple sections around here and there over the years. Makes for some interesting racing. I think we've got lights there. We kind of go into the dusk and race into the dusk hours there at Bahrain. Not as spectacular as, you know, Abu Dhabi, but it still makes for an exciting race. And, you know, we've seen some epic battles here, like you said, between teammates, and hopefully we'll see an epic battle between Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel, because I don't think we're going to see a battle between Kimi Raikkonen and Valtteri Bottas.
No, and I don't think you'll see a battle between Valtteri Bottas and Lewis Hamilton.
No, I don't think you will either.
So, you know, that's left for, you know, obviously, you know, we don't know what's going to happen at this point. It's still early days, but you would think that it's going to be a battle between Hamilton and Vettel, and probably a straight-up fight at this point.
Mr. Wire, your pick to win the 2017 Bahrain Grand Prix.
Mr. Sebastian Vettel always goes well at Bahrain when he has a car underneath him. He did so with Red Bull. I expect it from Ferrari.
All right. Well, you can have fun picking him. I'm going to say Mr. Lewis Hamilton is going to win another one. You know, I thought Bottas was going to take this opportunity to do some cool stuff, but I haven't seen it yet out of him, and I haven't seen it by Vettel's teammate either. We'll be back to talk about it next week. Before we get out of here, Mr. Wire, anything else, my friend?
Have a good week.
All right, you too. All right, so on that note, I want to thank you for tuning in, and thanks for taking part in the show. Check us out online, themotorsportshour.com. For Chris Wire, my name is Clark Sprinkle. Until next week, bye-bye.
Boom, 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 boom